Chad Robbins is a Cornell grad and Wharton School MBA who was working in real estate finance a decade ago when his brother Harlan approached him with an idea.
My brother's a theoretical physicist turned computational biologist, clearly the smart one in the family. And what he called me up in kind of 2009 and said, you want to start a business? I figured out how to sequence T-cell receptors at high throughput. And I was like, yes, I'm in. And then I went to Wikipedia. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? What I didn't know the difference between a T-cell receptor and a T-bone steak.
A decade later, the company they created, Adaptive Biotechnologies, is using the genetic code of the immune system to change the diagnosis and treatment of disease. Adaptive is valued at more than $1 billion, and it has partnerships with industry giants Microsoft and Genentech to advance its technology. And this week, Adaptive filed to raise $230 million in an initial public offering, promising to end a long IPO drought in the Seattle region. On this episode of GeekWire, we will get the inside story of Adaptive Biotechnologies and share what we learned this past week in its IPO filing. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. It's GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
And GeekWire health tech reporter James Thorne.
Hey, James. Great to have you in here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So many people who listen to our podcast may know you from the GeekWire health tech podcast, but I think this is your first time on the flagship show.
Welcome. It's going to get exciting.
Yeah, that's right. First time here.
Awesome. So if you have not subscribed to GeekWire Health Tech, I highly recommend it. James does a deep dive on a lot of issues at the intersection of health and technology with entrepreneurs and innovators. It's a good one. So subscribe to that. And in the meantime, we have some big health tech news to talk about that also intersects with the startup world. Adaptive Biotechnologies, which is one of the standouts in the life sciences scene in Seattle, just filed this week for its initial public offering. James, for people who don't know Adaptive Biotechnologies, one of the most interesting things about them is that they were founded by two brothers, Chad and Harlan Robbins, which we'll talk about later. But what does the company do? How would you describe it to the layperson who's not immersed in this world?
Basically, what Adaptive has done is create this platform, and it sequences the human immune system. Basically, looks at what your body is doing to react to diseases inside of you. And that's a really powerful thing when you think about it, because if you can see what the immune system is doing, then you can actually tell what's going on inside the body. What diseases do you have? And that's really what they're going after here. They're basically targeting two things. They want to be able to diagnose you. You find out what diseases are going on inside your body, and they want to be able to develop better, more personalized cancer treatments.
I actually got to talk with Adaptive CEO Chad Robbins last year on a panel at the Rotary in Seattle, and I asked him to give the company's elevator pitch.
Your 45-second elevator pitch, what is Adaptive Biotech, what are you doing, and who are you as an entrepreneur?
All that in 45 seconds? So Adaptive Biotechnologies uses next-generation DNA sequencing to profile your adaptive immune system, your T-cells and B-cell receptors. We developed a platform technology that's used by almost every pharma and biotech company you've heard of, but we also use our own technology to develop clinical applications to inform how a doctor's going to treat a patient. Our first clinical application is coming out, and that is for monitoring measurable residual disease in blood cancer. So essentially, we can predict which patients are going to relapse if you have a leukemia and lymphoma much more accurately, much more sensitively, et cetera. And then we have a second set of products coming out to predict which patients will respond to the new class of cancer immunotherapy drugs. And finally, we announced a landmark deal with Microsoft that is a convergence between chemistry in your immune system and machine learning and artificial intelligence. What we're trying to do is actually map the entire human adaptive immune system and what your immune system kind of recognizes and use that as a universal diagnostic for disease. So you go into a doctor's office, get a blood test, and we can tell you but basically diagnose many, many diseases at once based on your immune system.
All right, John. So we've been following the IPO market broadly, and recently we had an episode of the podcast with Ben Gilbert, and we talked about all the Silicon Valley companies that are going public this year, Uber, Lyft, Pinterest, but we haven't seen Seattle companies this year going public. What's the significance of this particular deal?
Well, it's possible that Seattle was the front runner here and got all of their big companies out of their system last year when we saw four companies go public, including Avalara and Smartsheet. And so a lot of those big companies have already gone out. Also, you mentioned Uber and Lyft and Pinterest and some of the Silicon Valley companies. Interesting, they're all very consumer-oriented. In this case, you have a company, and Adaptive, which is very much in the biotech, life sciences arena, health tech arena. So a different type of company. Typically, they have consumed massive amounts of capital in order to get to their milestones. Money losing, in that case, very similar to an Uber or Lyft. I don't think you'll see the profits generating from a company like Adaptive anytime soon.
And that's typical of biotech.
Absolutely.
Right?
Long-term bets. I mean, we've seen this before play out in the Seattle region too with the company Juno Therapeutics,
right,
which was a very fast-moving, high-flying biotechnology company that was formed quickly, went and raised massive amounts of money from Arch Venture Partners, Jeff Bezos, a full lineup of folks, and then went public just several months after it was founded, really, and hadn't seen a rocket ship ride like that. And then eventually sold to Celgene, was it, that they sold to?
That's
James?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
then
Celgene, which is looking to be bought by Bristol Myers Squibb now.
It was kind of the traditional evolution of a biotech company, but compressed, like on fast forward.
Yeah, I hadn't seen one quite like that. And Adaptive is a little bit different in that regard. They've been around for a while, founded in 2009, so they're 10 years in, which if you're looking at the venture capital model and the new venture capital model in terms of their initial investment to exit IPO, it is about 10 years now. It used to be 5 to 7, but now it's taking longer to build these companies. So 10 years is about right in terms of the exit point, whether it's an acquisition or IPO.
So when you think about this bigger picture for the Seattle tech scene, is this significant beyond Adaptive in terms of its biotech work, in other words?
I don't think so. I mean, there are several emerging biotech, health tech companies in the Seattle area, but there always have been. There was Juno. There was, going way back, Immunex. There was Dendrion. You know, there's always been a crop of life sciences biotech companies in the Seattle area, and a pretty strong crop. The problem in the Seattle biotech and life sciences community historically is you've had fits and starts of success and then a bit of a plateau and falling back a bit. And so it's been a bit two steps forward, one step back with the biotech community here. And you've seen that over the years with companies like I mentioned, Immunex getting acquired, ICOS getting acquired and essentially shutting down their operations here, Zymogenetics. And so the risk with a company like with Juno, where Celgene has bought them, and I know they've made the commitment to stay here, but will they truly stay here? I guess the big question for Adaptive is, can Adaptive be the $100 billion biotech company, life sciences company that anchors this region in a much, much bigger way? Maybe they're on that path. I don't know.
In the past, you would have looked at this and said, oh, they're going public. Clearly, they are going to be an independent company for a long time. But then you look at what happened to Juno.
Not typical in biotech, too. I mean, there are these massive, massive big pharma companies that just come in and plow over everybody at the end of the day. And Seattle doesn't have one of those anchor tenants. It has anchor tenants in software with Microsoft and Amazon, travel with Expedia. You could even make the claim in mobile with T-Mobile, but it doesn't have that anchor tenant that goes out and does the gobbling up of other companies.
One of the cool things that happens when a company does file to go public is the S-1 registration statement, which is essentially a juicy read. It's like better than a novel.
I love it. And whenever I see an S-1 pop up, I get really excited, folks. I know.
Exactly.
Yesterday, we were in the office. John comes running in telling everyone Adaptive just filed for an IPO.
Yep.
It's exciting times. You cover these companies. We've covered this company for 10 years. And now you finally get to see if the executives have been truthful with you about everything they've been telling, because you can get the real nitty gritty on everything they're going on, because they do. They lay out risk factors. They lay out if there have been any lawsuits. They lay out everything. And it's really fascinating reading.
And they lay out whether or not they're making or losing money and how much they're making or losing. And we are going to talk about that when we come back right after this.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and James Thorne. We're talking about adaptive biotechnologies and its IPO filing this past week. So, James, what did we learn from the filing itself? What were the key points and the takeaways?
One of the juicy little bits we got was we learned what Microsoft actually paid to Adaptive as part of the deal that they did in 2017. So Microsoft gave Adaptive $45 million. This is for their universal diagnostic blood test. Sounds really cool and promising. We'll see if it
sounds
actually
like
pans out.
No.
A little bit. No, I mean...
But for a different purpose.
Yes. Right.
And presumably technology.
Yes.
Right, no, I mean...
It probably wouldn't be going public if it wasn't tested.
The Theranos comparison is interesting. You know, what Adaptive is doing is really... Theranos was trying to do a traditional blood testing in just a much smaller package.
And faster.
Yeah. What Adaptive is doing is really looking at this problem through the immune system, which is something that, you know, just hasn't been done before.
I actually got a chance to ask Chad Robbins about the Microsoft partnership when I spoke with him at that Rotary luncheon last year.
What role do you expect AI automation to play in transforming not only our understanding, but our ability to cure the human body?
Yeah, so let me describe what it is first, and then I think we can put that question in context. Your immune system is actually the best natural diagnostic, and we're just leveraging the power of this natural diagnostic to be able to detect disease. So think about the properties of your immune system. Its job is to detect a very small perturbation, so an affront or an attack on the body, and then to amplify that signal throughout the body, and then to remember it. But it's very, very specific. So in your body, we'll focus on the type of cells that are called T cell receptors. Their job is to be able to scan those perturbations or those affronts, which are called pathogens, that present with each disease has many different of these kind of antigens associated with the disease. So basically, and not to get too scientific, but we're trying to link up the scanner with the attack, okay? This is actually a web-scale problem, all right? So think about, let's take a disease like ovarian cancer, which might have 300 of these different antigens that present, but many of these receptors can bind to each one of these antigens. And the receptor space is estimated to be about 10 to the 15th, which is a boatload. Okay, so the idea is that we, through chemistry and informatics, can start to fill out these mini maps by each disease state. What Microsoft in artificial intelligence, it's a massive machine learning problem. So we're feeding in this data and learning over time, so that de novo receptor, a receptor that you haven't seen before, you want to be able to predict with a high degree of fidelity or confidence that binds to the same antigen, which is correlated, actually specific for that disease. So basically, you're using this heavy machine learning and artificial intelligence to be able to, with confidence, make predictions that it's like a reverse diagnosis of disease. So it's really interesting. And one of the things that is going to be a challenge for us is this is a totally new paradigm with the FDA. It's a totally new paradigm with the insurance companies, right? Because you're actually having them rely on a machine learning, something we haven't ever seen before, to kind of diagnose disease, but we're really high degree of confidence. So it's to think about kind of that set of problems and how you navigate them is where we're at. Now, actually, one more point is we're trying to create kind of the X-ray of the immune system, or MRI. And if you go back historically, the MRI was actually indicated for a specific use, not a screen of a biological system. So our idea is, once we layer on, we're not going to get it all at once where it's going to be this screen and we're going to diagnose hundreds. But if we can get ovarian, we can get celiac disease, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Lyme disease, you start laying these on,
then they're going to, but from a cost perspective and from a, oh, we get it, then eventually it's going to say, okay, well, you can diagnose many, many diseases all at once.
It's interesting because there's so much focus on Amazon these days, but through that partnership, you have an interesting window into one of the venerable companies of the Seattle region, and that's Microsoft. What's it been like so far partnering with them?
It's been really, really great. They've been a phenomenal partner to us so far. I mean, we actually had the opportunity when we were doing this to go. We actually had some deals on the table from companies in the Bay Area, starting with the GNNA, the other big tech companies. And we actually chose to go with Microsoft. We chose for a couple of different reasons. And they did make a significant investment in our company. But for Microsoft, that's still a blip on their balance sheet. But the level of senior level attention, I mean, this went to Satya and Amy and actually Bill Gates. My brother and I got an opportunity to go walk through the deal with him about 6 weeks ago. And that was no cupcake. He was pretty well prepared and grilled us.
That's great to hear.
But the senior level attention from that organization on, because they think that healthcare and AI and their cloud, I mean, this is a big cloud play for them, is really in the future. So they've been great. And Peter Lee on the AI side, I mean, they've just put a ton of support resources, people behind it.
So we learned the size of Microsoft's investment.
Right. And we also learned what Adaptive promised to Microsoft, which is that they will spend $12 million on Azure cloud services over the lifetime of the deal, which is 7 years.
That was an interesting glimpse because you get a sense for the quid pro quo, the back and forth that happens in these deals. Microsoft isn't just making an investment and hoping for a return. They're actually generating some business for themselves in the cloud through these investments that they make. I think the Adaptive deal in that way is pretty representative of what Microsoft and Amazon and others do when they make these partnerships. So we also found out the financials. The company posted a net loss of $46.4 million last year on revenues of $55.6 million. So not that bad. We've seen a lot more red ink in some of these IPO filings. And especially for a biotech company, I'm actually surprised that the loss wasn't more significant.
I was surprised by that as well. And you know, we also saw on the balance sheet here, they've got $440 million sitting around. They're not going away anytime soon.
We also learned how much each of Adaptive's investors owns in the company. A couple company names here that I had never heard before, Viking Global Entities and Matrix Capital Management. Together, they own more than 50% of the company. Are these household names in the VC world?
Viking, from what I can gather, I think it's a Tiger Cub, so came out of Tiger Global, so it's a big private equity entity. But what is interesting is you're not seeing, at least when I scanned through it, you didn't see some of the traditional venture capital names in the mix there. So that's an interesting path to them getting the funding to get their company off the ground.
One other notable part of the filing is that we know how much they're seeking to raise as part of the IPO, which is really ultimately the goal is to bring in cash, and that's $230 million. And that compares to more than $400 million that they've raised in private equity.
Well-funded company. So we'll see if they can get out there and make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things here is that both with this Microsoft and Genentech deal, these are still very much in early stages. They do not have, you know, a ready marketable product yet, and that's, they're going to need that cash down the road.
One of the things that I love about the Adaptive story, and I've gotten to talk over the years with Chad Robbins in particular, the CEO, who's the
I've played golf with him.
You
before.
Played
yes.
What?
He's as bad as me. actually might be even a little bit worse. Well, I would
you should
say.
Explain
Sorry,
this because you're typically not out there playing golf with startup founders.
No, well, he was a recipient of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award, and as you know, Todd, we've been judges of that in the past, and so one of the things we've been able to do is participate in their annual event in Palm Springs, and I went out on the golf course and hacked around with Chad. I think he left on like the 16th hole. I at least hung around and finished my round, as bad as it was. But, you know, maybe he has better things to do with his time than practice his golf game. He's trying to build a multi-billion-dollar company. So, hey, can't fault him too much, right?
Not only did I have to learn kind of the underlying chemistry and technology and stuff like multiplex PCR and DNA sequencing, but then we had to learn about the immune system, which is probably your most complex biological system, and then how it applied to many, many of these different disease state and treatment modalities. And by the way, I'm
by no means an expert at that, and I've got an unbelievable team and science team to be able to do that. However, I will tell you a funny story. As I'm getting up to speed in this, we started the business at the end of 2009. At 2013 or 14, I found myself on stage at a 4 or 5-person panel at a Harvard Medical School in the rotunda of Harvard Medical School, and it's a room full of PhDs and doctors, and everyone else on stage is a PhD. You know, I'm a mutt that happened to have my MBA, so I'm like, hey, I'm going to break the ice here. And so I said, hey, I just want to let you guys know, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm also not a scientist. I don't have my PhD. I said, but I did stay on a Holiday Inn Express last night. So in my audience and my friends and everyone who watches sports and sees this on ESPN and all the commercials on all of this thing are like, would think it was hilarious. And you had two people in the room that are like dying laughing. The rest of the room is dead silent. Like, what the hell is this guy talking about? So long story short, we had a big learning curve on the science, and we can get into people later, which I think we would all probably agree is the most important part of, you know, all of our successes, the teams that we have, but and the mistakes that we've made regarding people. But it was definitely the learning curve for me was very steep and still is.
I just appreciate that part of their story. And I remember when they accepted their EY award, Chad went up there with Harlan, and Chad did most of the speaking, and they realized, oh, wait, Harlan wants to say something. And he came back up. They played the music to bring him back up, and he just said, I'm just the arm candy. So you've got clearly a fun dynamic between two siblings here. And John, we were talking on Slack last night. Can you remember another case where a company founded by two siblings in the Seattle area went public? I was trying to think.
Not
Nick
going
and,
public. Yeah. Well, Nick. Yeah, a couple names come to mind. Nick Hanauer and Adrian Hanauer, the venture capitalists, and Adrian, the owner of the Sounders, have a number of joint business ventures together where they've largely invested but haven't really co-founded together to this level where it's nitty-gritty day-to-day operations. The only other company that comes to mind, they didn't go public, mind you, but the co-founders of Tune, and Lee Brown. It's interesting there because they're twin brothers that co-founded a company together. But no, I can't think of two brothers in the Seattle area ever taking a company public before. But if we're wrong, or if you know other sibling entrepreneurial stories out there, please send it to us at tips@geekwire.com, because this is a story I've always wanted to do.
Yeah, I'm trying to
talk about how, you know, brother-sister combo or brother-brother or sister-sister combo create companies together and the dynamic there. There are a number of husband-wife.
Yeah, and I'm actually thinking back. Coffee Meets Bagel was founded by
three sisters. Of course, yes, that's correct.
They're not based in Seattle, but they have a large engineering presence here. Three sisters, two of them twins, and the last I spoke with them, they were co-CEOs.
Yeah, that was a really great podcast, so you should give a shout-out where people can find that, because that was really an interesting one.
That was part of our Numbers Geek podcast. You can find that on that Numbers Geek podcast. It was Arum Kang, the co-CEO of Coffee Meets Bagel. With Lucas and Lee Brown, you had two technologists at Tune, and then they partnered with Peter Hamilton, the CEO. But here in the same family, you have the CEO who had no idea what his genius brother was doing, as Chad puts it. And then you have the technologist, the scientist, the real brain behind the thing.
That's pretty unique.
Yeah.
That's pretty unique.
James, can you explain what's next for Adaptive beyond the IPO and sort of what the challenge will be for them longer term in terms of bringing this technology to market?
Yeah, so you know, like I said, they're doing two things. The first with this deal with Microsoft, you know, they have a long road ahead trying to commercialize this technology to take a single blood test and tell you, you know, whether or not you have one of a dozen or more diseases. So they're going to have to do tons of testing. It seems to be a bit easier road than what they're facing with Genentech. They're looking to develop novel approaches to cancer treatments. These things can take a decade, two decades. So potentially a very long road with that partnership. But you know, with this technology, you know, there's a chance that they could do some real meaningful work, you know, the kind of stuff that leaves a legacy.
Todd, you know why I knew this was coming? And it's not because Chad tipped me off on the golf course.
How'd you know it was coming?
You may remember a little bit of the controversy around the GeekWire Awards this year, where Adaptive was a nominee for, I believe, next tech titan.
And when you say controversy, you mean behind the scenes.
We're given the behind the scenes look at what's going on here at GeekWire. But you may remember they were a finalist.
They were chosen by the judges as a finalist in which category?
I think it was next tech titan.
Yeah.
Which this would lead you to believe they're on that path if they're filing for an IPO. But behind the scenes, they wanted to be removed as a finalist. They didn't want any attention being drawn to them. Although they didn't say that at the time. They just said, we'd like to be removed as a finalist. And I know their CFO pretty well, who's the former CFO at Zillow, by the way. So some experience taking companies public. And it seemed like the writing was on the wall. If you're trying to stay out of the limelight, it's usually an indication that an IPO is in the works.
Because you don't want to send material signals to potential investors in the public offering.
Yeah, now I don't
think super cautious.
It is very cautious. That was my thought too. It was enlightening in terms of what it said about their culture a bit. Yeah. So, but anyway, I knew it was coming.
Either that or some kind of acquisition or closure.
Or it could have been an acquisition. Yeah. I don't think it was. I didn't expect that. Yeah.
If you're interested in this topic, be sure to check out our health tech podcast hosted by James Thorne. James, it's been great to have you on.
Thanks, Todd.
And until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
Thanks for listening, everybody.